Hey up there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 274. This is the overripened edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. If you are unaware, which if you listen to this a couple weeks down the road, a couple days, nights, etc. on down the line, you might not actually know, but the Caffeination is actually recorded on Sunday and Wednesday nights. The problem, of course, being every once in a while I just can't get it together, and a show has a little bit of extra time to ripen on the vine. So that's what happened here. Unfortunately, we were unable to bring the show to fruition. I was unable to actually get myself in a position to record. I had everything set up. Everything was locked and loaded, so to speak. I had all my research ready, and my body decided to do a little bit of a executive decision and put myself to sleep. So last night I was ready and willing to actually go on and record the Caffeination Podcast, do the research and all that other fun stuff, and it wasn't happening. There was no way that I could actually force myself into recording because I just fell asleep, plain and simple, on the couch. So it kind of was a little bit of an abortive attempt to try and even start the podcast. So we're just kind of doing a refresh here. We started over, new research, everything. A couple of the more interesting stories we kept on, so hopefully with the refresh, everything will get up and better. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. You can find us over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. If you have comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate mail, you can send it directly to caffeination@gmail.com. And there's a whole bunch of other ways you can get into contact with us, and they're all listed, helpfully enough, we hope, over at caffeination.com. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. What that basically means is that we're a member of a society of podcasts where all of the podcasts have agreed to a couple basic tenets, the one of which is that they will all create child-safe, educational, and tech-related podcasts. So if you want tech podcasts, you head on over to techpodcasts.com. Another thing we wanted to talk to you just a little bit about today is our sponsor for today's show. If you've ever been in an online meeting, you know how long it can take to set up the technology and get the meeting started. That's why you need to use the easiest online meeting service available, GoToMeeting. With GoToMeeting, you and your attendees can join a meeting in seconds without technical headaches. You can deliver instant sales demonstrations and customer training sessions right from your own computer. Share presentations or programs with anyone and avoid the high cost of travel. You and your attendees can also use GoToMeeting's integrated phone and voice over IP conferencing service to make sure that everyone in your meeting is on the same page. GoToMeeting is so easy that you'll have fun your first time running a meeting in seconds. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days with this unlimited online meetings. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. All right, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. We've had a great relationship with them so far, and we'd highly suggest that you head on over there and check their product out. If you haven't had a chance, I mean, it's really nice and easy to actually do so. All right, we do have a bunch of stuff that we're going to be talking to you about today. We're going to be talking about cooking, coffee, green things, Legos, zombies, and junk. First up, we're going to talk to you a little bit about a state that's a neighbor to my east. That would, of course, be New Jersey, the great garden state, the butt of a lot of jokes that are out there. However, this is one of the times when you really can't make too much fun of them. They're actually doing some really good stuff in the realm of wind power. Now, a lot of the problems with wind power, specifically if you want to have, problems with wind power in general are that you need a constant source of wind and you need a relatively high rate of wind or wind speed to actually generate a decent amount of power. Another thing is you need massive, massive turbines to actually, you know, harness this power. So unless you live in Holland, it's not really socially acceptable to have a ton of windmills laying around. So one of the easiest ways that people have kind of figured out to do this is through offshore wind farms. So basically you put a ton of massive wind turbines out into the sea, and you just don't want to have to see them from the shore. That's the biggest problem with that. You don't want to end up looking out on a lovely picturesque day and see tons of tiny little windmills off in the distance. So there's a lovely lovely little graphic that they have up there. Apparently, if it's at 2 miles out, it's relatively visible. They go all the way up to 15 and 20 miles out. You know, how far out you actually have to have the wind turbine to actually see the size differential. So it's kind of interesting to see. But apparently, this wind project is actually slated to be completed in 2013. The really interesting part about the New Jersey thing is that they're going to be able to build in water that's 100 meters deep. This is incredibly deep water, which means that they can go very, very far out, so that you're not going to actually be able to see them, which is going to be a good thing. So 2013 is just around the corner when you talk about construction projects, so it's going to be really kind of interesting to see exactly the kind of return on power that they get. And we'll see. We're going to keep a little bit of a closer eye on this one. There's also a project in Delaware. It's kind of fun seeing all the different projects on the West Coast, you know, the tidal power that they're trying to use in San Francisco and stuff like that. But to actually see it a little bit closer to home, maybe get to, I don't know, it's not going to be something you're going to be able to see, so it's not going to be something I can head out and take pictures of or anything, but it's really interesting and really kind of empowering to see different renewable energy options actually start popping up. So hopefully this one takes off the right way. All right, up next, again, a little bit of a renewable energy, a little green technology wheedling its way here into the caffeination. Sharp is demoing a 52-inch LCD TV that's powered supposedly by solar energy. This is just a proof of concept. This is just a interesting LED backlit style TV, and I really don't know what to make of this because a lot of the information is in Japanese. Every year there's a bunch of different conferences that crop up. Right around this time, the CETEC or CEATEC conference is in Japan, and it's basically a bunch of monitors and a bunch of TVs. It's not something I'm usually interested in, but however, this kind of caught my eye because they're saying that this 52-inch TV, this backlit LCD or LED TV, which has a lovely picture on it, and there's not a lot of other information besides that, is being powered, at least in part, by a massive solar panel that's sitting in front of it. The only problem with it is when you're looking at it, you're saying, okay, well, where would I put the solar panel? If I put it on the roof, does it mean that the solar panel has to have collected enough energy for me to watch TV? What happens on cloudy days? Is it just a supplemental thing? Is it more of a gimmick than anything else? So, I mean, I think it might be, in one way, just to showcase how little power this TV may actually use, which is a very good thing. And if it somehow comes with a solar panel package, that would be kind of cool as well. The only thing is, if it comes with a solar panel of this size, which is roughly double the actual size of the TV, I'm thinking that you're probably going to end up running around like 10 grand for something like this. I'm just pulling the number out of absolutely nowhere, but I have no idea how much this thing's actually going to cost. So it's saying that the solar panel was actually going to be able to generate 220 kilowatts per hour, which is kind of impressive, and that they're saying that the TV uses approximately that, so they would kind of cancel each other out. That's at least what I can read from the actual numbers that are being put into the documentation. But everything else is in Japanese. If you know Japanese, head on over there and please give me an idea what I'm looking at. All right, up next in the last little bit of green, well, I think there may be one more story about greening in the end, but this is about a pocket light. This is an entirely new and different, it's a concept, it's a design concept that's being put forward. It's by two designers who are trying to find a different way to actually have a portable light source, and one of the ways that they came up with is actually a card, and this card has a fold-up of an incandescent light bulb. It's the easiest way to kind of explain it is imagine a credit card where there's a picture of an incandescent light bulb on it, and where the picture of the incandescent light bulb is, circumscribe around that so that you could actually fold the faux light bulb up. Now, this is roughly about the thickness of two incandescent light, or not thickness of two incandescent lights, but rather the thickness of two credit cards. This is like a little piece of foam core, and somehow there's some kind of interesting little switch in there that when you fold the actual light bulb up, it actually lights up with the tiny little LEDs in there. I think this is a pretty cool idea. I think this is kind of neat. I don't know if it'll actually ever get made, but I just wanted to kind of pass it along because I thought it was really kind of I don't know. It's kind of fun. So, I mean, everybody has a need at some point or another to have a little bit of portable light. So even if it's this kind of soft, warming light, you might have a need for it in your car or something else like that. I could see this actually finding some kind of niche out there, but I don't really know if it's an incredibly feasible design. I don't know what the price point on it would be or anything, but I wanted to just kind of put it up there. All right, it's your money. DARPA goes for the gold with an underwater airplane. Now, DARPA is the organization within the government. Now, I need to kind of speak carefully on these things, you know, but they're the organization within the government that basically runs places like Area 51. They do a lot of the design and testing of new weapons and whatnot. And every once in a while, you see some of the design challenges that actually come out there. And what they're trying to do now is create something that should be almost impossible to have exist. They're trying to create an underwater airplane. And at first I was like, okay, yeah, you know, that seems relatively simple. And then when I started reading a little bit more about the design problems that an underwater airplane would actually have to conquer, I just kind of got a little interested. So I thought it was an interesting idea. I wasn't sure if this was just simply a waste of taxpayers' money or if it was actually going to be an interesting idea that they might be able to follow through on. And one of the things that they're saying, it's definitely a dichotomy. An airplane and a submarine are two incredibly different things, although they might look similar in a certain light. For instance, an airplane has to be as light as possible to gain lift. A submarine has to be as heavy as possible to actually stay below the waves. So I was like, okay, I can understand that. Maybe ballast tanks filled with water would be one way you could do it. Then they have flow conditions. Flow conditions are basically the shape, the aerodynamic shape of an airplane designed in such a fashion that it actually provides lift and it can, you know, is able to glide effortlessly through the air being a relatively thin medium. And everything's all about fluid dynamics. And then when you actually have it submersed, water is much thicker, and it doesn't operate along the same kind of rules. And if you look at things like speed records, land speed record is broken relatively quickly. It's a steady progression higher and higher and higher. The same thing with air speed record. That is almost exponential how quickly that went up, and people keep trying to break that, you know, Mach 10 or whatever. But the speed for water travel is incredibly slow because water is such a strange medium to actually try and conquer. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they can actually manage to find an object of some sort, somehow, you know, manage to best this design problem. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there because I thought it was pretty cool. And that leads into the next thing that we're going to talk to you about. This is from over at gizmag.com. When the Rubik's Cube is no longer represents a challenge to you. I know a lot of people, I think I may have talked about this before, but this is the first time I've ever seen a video on what this thing actually was. I know people who can solve a Rubik's Cube. I personally cannot. I don't know if it's the fact that I've never spent enough time with it, but I think they're really interesting and really cool little gadgets and little fun toys and fidgets that are always kind of, I don't know, they keep your mind loose and stuff like that. This is called a Rubik's Mirror Blocks puzzle. Instead of the uniform set of 9 blocks per side, imagine a set of blocks that was kind of organized as if it was divided by the golden rule. So it's when you're looking at it, it's the blocks on the far right-hand side of the one face might be really tiny and really thin, or really tall and really tiny, and then they go up to fatter and wider. It's just a really strange take on it, and when they actually kind of break apart, when they actually spin around and rotate on the different axes, it looks more of like a Mondrian painting than anything else, except for the fact that it is all mirror finished, hence the name Rubik's Mirror Blocks. The only problem with it, well, when you look at the video, first of all, you can skip about the first minute and a half because it's the guy trying to open the package. Second of all, when you're actually looking at it, there's a lot of time that seems to be spent trying to find the right axis to spin on. When you actually have the Rubik's Cube, since the blocks are all a uniform size, it's much easier to find an axis to actually rotate the different segments around. So this seems to be a design failing of this, and there's certain ways that it just can't rotate at all. So I could definitely see this as being one of those toys that would get thrown out a window very soon. But I just wanted to kind of push it out there because I thought it was relatively interesting. All right, up next is IntelliTunes. It's a new two-screen digital jukebox that hangs on your wall and looks sleek. All right, now what we're going to do is we're going to take the concept of a jukebox, the very old and very kind of iconic jukebox with the the arched bubble lights going over the top, and you're going to flatten it out. You're going to make it look like it was kind of mixed with an iPhone, and you're going to put it on the wall. Except you're going to make it roughly the same size as like a standard painting or something that you would put on your wall. It doesn't look very large at all, so it has an 8-inch LCD monitor in the center of it that displays the artist and a whole bunch of other stuff, and it actually runs Windows XP of a certain flavor, and it seems really cool. There's a lot of different things that I'd love to be able to do in my house, a lot of different automation things. It's like, you know what, if I just had like a small computer that I could stick somewhere and an easy way to input things into it, it would be so much better. So I'm looking at this going, it's a really great idea. I just don't know. The price point that they're talking about is $4,000. That's hefty. And I'm willing to bet that a large percentage of that price point is actually the touchscreen technology and the dual LCD screens in there, because a small computer that doesn't have a lot of power on it, that'll run you maybe $500. I mean, we're talking like Apple TV money there, or actually I think that's like $300. I think we're talking like more about the Mac Mini kind of money, you know what I mean? And then when you actually get on up to the hard drives and other things, I could see where it almost hit like $1,000. But when you start hitting $4,000, that seems a bit over the top. And it's, at that point, you're paying for the design aesthetic, you're paying for the touch screen and the cool new technology. And you're also paying for the fact that it's a jukebox, so I don't know. I like the idea behind it, but I think that I would probably end up building something a lot less cool looking and putting it in my house before I could actually spend $4,000 on something like this. All right, up next is a new design, a lot of design things on today's show. But it's a new design on a pool table. I love playing pool. I'm not very good at playing pool, but I absolutely love it. It is in large part to spending long hours at pool halls when I was growing up and in the early years of college and everything with a couple of my friends. There was a pool hall around where we lived called Pockets, and it was behind a mall, literally in the basement of one of the stores or a couple of the stores, and for $5 you could play all night. So if you got in there at 6 o'clock, as long as you didn't leave, you paid $5 until they closed at 2 a.m. So you kind of had to bring your own snacks and everything like that. So it was kind of cool, but they never had anything like this. And I got significantly better the longer I played, and that's kind of common when you actually look at any game, really. The longer you play at something, the more you practice at something, the better off you are. I think all of those skills would have to go out the window for this. Imagine a completely round pool table. Yep, you heard me. Everything's round. The playing surface is a giant circle. And the actual holes are set at one, two, they're the same number of holes, I think they reduced the number of holes by two, so that's it. There's no extra bumpers that I can see. I don't know if the curves would actually do this. It's a strange different permutation of pool that I would love to be able to try. If they just had one of these in a pool hall, I think it would be fantastic. The only problem with it is when you increase the surface area around the actual pool table, you decrease the amount of usable space that's around the pool table. So we have friends who have a pool table in their basement, and it's cramped to try and play a game in there. So if you were to try and install like a round pool table somewhere, you would really have to have a lot of room around it, because there's no angles you can play, there's no corners you can kind of hang over and hug to be able to make it fit into a room it's really not meant to. This is a massive installation. No word yet on the actual price of it, but I just love putting design things out like that. And then we're going to have a really strange little article that kind of slipped through that I just had to say something about. I'm not really one for fashion. I know that might come as a surprise for you. I just don't get a lot of the high-end, like, haute couture flat fashion. I'm probably even pronouncing it wrong. But, some of the stuff, like the ready-to-wear fashion shows and stuff like that, they just kind of weird me out, and I can't believe that there's an industry based on them. So when I heard that there was a fashionable, quote-unquote, Pac-Man helmet that hit the runway, I kind of had to click on it just because I needed to see it. I'm not a big fan of the models that are even in the thing, because they just look unhealthy to me. But beyond that, they're wearing literally a helmet that looks like a Pac-Man head. And then there's another one that looks like a ghost. So it's just a series of strange, strange fashion decisions that I'm just going to put it out there. You can head on over there if it interests you. If not, no worries, no harm, no foul. I don't know what to say with it beyond the fact that it's weirding me out a little bit, but it's kind of interesting that they chose the Pac-Man as a design implementation for something in there. I don't even know if that's the right word. It's they just kind of use it as a design feature, maybe to get more people looking at it, maybe to get more people talking about it, but you're not gonna reduce the amount of times I'm going to scoff at the high fashion. I just can't find a way to actually approach the subject, you know? So, all right, we're going to move right along. Not just for sausages anymore. Vienna builds the tallest Lego tower in the world. If you've been with the show for a little while, you'll know that Legoland in Windsor, England, recently built the tallest Lego tower in the world. However, Vienna has recently topped them at 29.48 meters. This is a huge, huge Lego tower. I mean, it only beat the previous record by 18 centimeters, so this is a massive, massive undertaking they've gone through. And the funny thing is, when you're looking at it, they have a crane that's up there. What they did was they had kids build the sections, and the sections, I guess, were specifically designed, and you had to build them a certain number of blocks by a certain number of blocks. And after they were checked, an adult would actually place them up on the top of the crane. I think it would be a lot cooler to actually let the kids ride up there, but unfortunately, there's probably all kinds of waivers and other safety problems that you'd have that. And then, of course, you'd have the one kid who would start throwing bricks off the top of it, and that would just be bad. All right, moving right along. I mean, just congratulations to Vienna as a whole, because it just seems really cool. And I'd like to see something like that in Philadelphia. I would just like to be able to walk by it and just see something. It's astounding how tall these things are getting. All right, moving right along to a Lego zombie apocalypse. I told you we had a lot of stuff about Legos. There's a new video game coming out called Left 4 Dead, and it's interesting. I don't really know very much about it other than the fact that it has zombies in it, and somebody has decided to create for the BrickCon 2008. I did not know there was a convention for Legos, and apparently the guys over at Kotaku didn't either. They didn't go, unfortunately. However, somebody sent in pictures of a Lego zombie apocalypse, so it is my job, since that we have the Caffeination Zombie Plan, to pass along to you the Left 4 Dead Lego Zombie Apocalypse in pictures. There's nothing else I can do. My hands are tied. All right, moving right along. Again, with the zombie kind of vein of conversation here, but a little bit more of a real-world scenario. Killer zombie drone is awesome and recycled. This is from over at Hackaday.com. The idea behind this is that they took a 1960s farewell, I don't even know if that's the right name. It's a Phantom II jet fighter from the 1960s. And they retrofitted the jet cockpit. You know, they basically pulled these things out of the scrap heap, cleaned them up, fixed them out, retrofitted the cockpit so that it was able to accept a remote-controlled drone being put in there, and then they armed the sucker and let it loose. One computer is supposed to be able to control six of these. I don't know if these guys have ever, the people who are responsible for this, have ever seen Terminator, but this is probably going to be a bad idea. It's called Skynet, people. These things are going to take over. There is no way around it. I like the idea of being able to put machines in harm's way as opposed to humans, but the idea that there's going to be a computer remote-controlled, I like. Not necessarily that I like the fallibility that a human pilot puts into the things, but I like the think outside the box mentality that you can kind of expect when you put a fighter pilot in there. The decision making ability is there that's not there in a machine. Machines, everything's ones or zeros. Everything's black or white. There's no shades of gray. There's no bits of judgment. There's no judgment calls that are made. So when you're talking about this kind of heat and this kind of firepower, to leave that up to a machine, even if the machine is being remote controlled, it's frightening. I don't really know what else to say. So yes, they were decommissioned units, and it's fantastic that the Army, or the Air Forces rather, is finding different ways of using these things. Because, I mean, taxpayer millions were spent to build each and every single one of them. And these have like the lovely little Tiger Shark logo painted on the front, so it's the grinning nose cone and everything. Gotta love that, but it's I think if they're going to actually call them zombie planes, I think they should actually do a little bit of zombie paint damage to the side. Maybe they, you know, have little bits of fake zombie flesh hanging. I think that'd be kind of cool. All right, moving right along here. Trash and sewage. Didn't know what else to call here. This is from over at EcoGeek. This is the last little green article that we have for you here today. There's a company out there called Virtus Waste Control LLC that has actually found a way to expedite the decomposition of landfill matter. And they do this by taking the material that comes out of the back end of your septic tank and pouring it over top of the landfill. I don't know what else I can mention along these lines, keeping the show clean and everything, but it just seems like a really strange idea to just mix the streams. I mean, if you ever saw Ghostbusters, you don't mix the streams. So this is kind of a perfect storm of junk and perfect storm of waste. And I understand that it might hasten biodegradation. It might hasten the production of methane and everything else like that. But with the chemical agents, the chemical and biological agents now that you have in the same place, you are looking to create probably the nastiest Superfund site on the planet. That's the only thing that can come to my mind here. So I don't really know how great of an idea this is, but it's a different way of thinking about waste, so we'll see if it actually works out. All right, moving right along to something a little bit more lighthearted. How would you like to be able to find a way to create a bookshelf where everything is upside down? Yeah, there's a how-to guide over at Ogizmo that talks about how to make an upside-down bookshelf. So basically, if you were looking at it, you'd walk into somebody's house, there's a bookshelf installed on the wall upside down, all of the books are on it, and they're, you know, hanging from the shelf, basically. The trick here is, yeah, you guessed it, elastic straps. So you're not going to be pulling books in and out of this little contraption, but I love this. I think I would actually have done it a different way. I think I would have installed the bookshelf the correct way and then had everything hanging from the bottom anyway, just because I think that would look like a different and more interesting take on it. You know, shelf brackets are by nature ugly, so I think it would look a little bit more interesting if you inverted the whole thing, had the shelf the right way, but the books the wrong way. I think that would be a little bit better. All right, and the last little thing we have for you here is I love automatons. And if you are unaware of what an automaton is, it is a piece of machinery that is crafted. They're basically robots before there were computers. There's no other way to do it or to explain it. An automaton is a machine capable of replicating an act that is programmed into its gears. So by turning the gears on the automata, you are able to actually have it create something. And apparently, I was unaware of this, but the Franklin Institute, a museum in Philadelphia, actually has in their collection a machine that is capable of drawing three different poems and four different drawings. This is seven sketches in all. So basically, this thing is a scribe sitting at a desk. You put a quill pen in its hand and it actually draws things. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. And you really have to check out the videos. So I don't want to sully your impression of what this is. The story behind it is so rich and so full that I would love for you to just head on over there. One of the poems is in English. I think the other two are in French, and the sketches are just gorgeous. I mean, it's really kind of cool to see. This is better than an Etch-a-Sketch. This is an Etch-a-Sketch that draws itself. So it's unbelievable. And if you thought that I was interested in steampunk, if you thought that I was interested in the different kind of Jules Verne designs that were out there, this is like the epitome of all that. So I have to see this thing. I need to see if it's on public display in the Franklin Institute, so I have to find a way to get there to check this out. But they apparently have a lot of really crazy cool stuff that's not always out in public, so it's going to be kind of fun to see that and play around with that. Well, not play around with it. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't let me anywhere near it, but still. All right, that about wraps up the Tech Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Can't even say the name of my own podcast right. By the way, did I mention that this is the latest that I've started to record an actual show? Because I actually started to record it on Tuesday, the 7th of October, as opposed to Monday when I started the research. It's been a rough go on the show, so I'd appreciate any leeway you could kind of give us here. But this, of course, is the Caffeination Podcast. If you were listening to it in the stream over anywhere, then you can find it lovingly nestled with all all of its other Caffeination buddies, all the other 273 episodes in the stream over at www.caffeination.com. Caffeination.com, Caffeination Podcast. It's a little synergy there, you know what I mean? All right, up first in the caffeine and food section, we have Vancouver Considers Greening Up Coffee. All right, I lied, there was one more green thing. But there's bylaws that are currently on the table being proposed to help Vancouver kind of clean up the coffee industry. Because when you really think about it, the portable, the disposable coffee industry, you know, when you walk into Starbucks, you walk into Dunkin' Donuts or whatever it is, and you get a cup of coffee, the refuse that's created from you actually getting your coffee is pretty great. If you're talking about Starbucks, if you're talking about a convenience store, then what you have is you have the paper cup with a plastic lining that is unable to be recycled half the time, or most of the time. So there needs to be a different way around this problem. And if you're talking about Dunkin' Donuts, you're using styrofoam, which is bad juju. So I don't know if you can actually bring your own mug into Dunkin' Donuts. I think you can, so I'm going to have to start carrying my travel mug around more often. We've been stopping at Dunkin' Donuts more and more often lately, just because it's the only coffee shop kind of on the way to work. But it's the waste that goes in there. And they actually kind of break it down in this article. It's kind of interesting. But they say, basically, first of all, you have the lid and the cup. Then you have the stirrer that you use and then throw out. The stirrer gets used once, and then you throw it out. That's horribly wasteful. And at least in at least when you're talking about Starbucks, they're using wood, so yes, that can kind of be recycled. There's no problem with that. But then you move on, and what you're using when you rip open a sugar packet. Okay, all of a sudden, instead of just using sugar from a dispenser, you're actually creating more paper waste that gets thrown back into the stream. So there needs to be a lot more education of eateries such as Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, and whatever the other eateries are out there, the different coffee places. And you need to kind of they need to change their tune a little bit. We're kind of getting a little bit more eco-friendly in the world, and a lot of these places, specifically Dunkin' Donuts, I every once in a while I just kind of sit back and say, I can't believe they're still using styrofoam cups. I think pretty much everybody else has kind of moved away from that now. I just don't know why they're still on that. So Tim Hortons, apparently a lovely coffee establishment in Canada, has started a pilot project where they actually have a recycle bin in there so that they list the different pieces of trash that you're creating while you're using your coffee that you can throw into the recycle bin. I love that idea, but there doesn't seem to be much movement elsewhere. So just wanted to kind of head you on that direction, especially if you live in the Vancouver area. All right, up next here is an interesting little story. Joffrey's, if you remember, actually sent a sample for beta testing their coffee to the Caffeination Podcast a while ago, and I really wasn't a fan of it. It was like Jamaica Me Crazy or some blend like that. Mainly because I don't like artificial flavors in my coffee anymore. I don't know why. I think it's the fact that I've actually been drinking good coffee. I mean, I can even drink bad regular coffee now. I just can't drink the artificial flavors. They seem to there's this chemical overtone that just kind of sits on them, and there's this heavy syrup. Even when they're not flavored, it just kind of sits in there, and it just doesn't make it an enjoyable cup of coffee. But the fine folks over at Joffrey's have actually kind of gone back to the drawing board and using the feedback that they got from a lot of the different bloggers and everything else out there. Apparently, they took feedback from over 1,500 bloggers, and they actually created what they call Coffee 2.0, and this is what they list as the selling points of it. It's an upgraded flavor taste featuring smooth caramel and smoky overtones, increased focus on power with less distraction, faster, more efficient mental processing, amplified energy for blogging, coding, or gaming output, regular drip coffee or espresso capabilities, and the ultimate gift for the Web 2.0 guru in your life. However, Joffrey's, as a sign of affection to all of the people who entered into the beta testing contest, have given another free sample, but this time of the coffee in question. So I will be getting back to you on the next show after the taste test is conducted tomorrow to let you know how it actually works out. It was actually in our mail today. I got the email around noon, and when I got home, the coffee was already here. So gotta love the PR people, gotta love the way that everything worked out there. I mean, every once in a while you'll get an idea that something's coming, and you're like, okay, and you have to wait a couple days, but this was perfect synergy on their part, so good job with that. All right, moving right along to a little bit of a fun that we've been having here. We talked a little bit about the coffee burger, and the article is finally live. I don't know what else to say other than the fact that there are two articles out there. The first is the Form Over Function Friday. I posted the coffee burger article on Friday, so you can have at it as you will. There's a full Flickr set if you'd like gratuitous pictures of ground meat being mixed. I don't really know how many people get disgusted by pictures of ground meat, so I kind of just went back to basics and put tiny pictures in case you didn't find them tasteful at all. You could just go over there. Everything's over at Flickr, so you can actually follow through the stream on that one. Otherwise, you can link over to the article, which is held in our recipe section. So if you go up to the top of the page at caffeination.com, and you go to caffeination.com/recipes, you will find the coffee burger listed there. Or if you just want to go directly there, it's caffeination.com/recipes/coffee burger. The idea behind this is basically you take a normal, juicy, hand-thrown patty. And when I say hand-thrown, I mean that actually I throw it from hand to hand. And somehow the actual act of making the patty is just a little bit better when it actually leaves one hand and hits the other. I don't know if it destroys the cohesiveness of the burger or whatever, but I find that it gives the patty a much more firm shape when you do that. Maybe it knocks the air out of it. I don't even know. But there's a full recipe on up over at the Caffeination homepage, so you can head on over there and check that out. I'm really proud of this. It's a coffee-encrusted burger, and I just did a quick search for coffee burger, and one of the places that links back to my site was actually number 4, so that's pretty good. The first one was actually a webcomic, which I was unaware of, so I'm going to actually take a look at that. And then the third one was there was a Food Network recipe for the coffee burger. So I clicked on it. I was like, man, if they beat me to this, I'm going to be slightly upset. So because I thought I had done my research, didn't find anything. And then I head on over there, and their ingredients, this is the worst recipe that I've ever seen in the Food Network. I got to admit, and I really hope they kind of take it down, because this is disgusting. This is not disgusting in that it makes bad food, but there's nothing here. There's not even a picture of it. What they say is you need to take 2 pounds of ground beef, 6 slices of American cheese, salt and pepper, 2 hamburger buns. You break the 2 pounds of ground beef in half. You make 2 1-pound patties. You put the patties on the grill and you cook them. You salt and pepper them, and then you add the cheese in the last 5 minutes of cooking. I don't know why you need 6 slices of cheese if you're having 2 patties, but... You know, that aside, there's no coffee in this coffee burger. I don't even know why you would call it that. There's no hook, there's no anything. And the only good thing about it is that somebody actually already left a comment and said there's nothing here. Why even have this page on your site? So I want to just kind of put it out there and got to put a little plug in for the fact that by leaving my jalapenos in the yard just a little bit longer, they're starting to turn red, so we're going to have some lovely Chipotle here this winter. So, everything's kind of coming up roses, so to speak. So I'd like to thank you for sticking through this episode with us, and hopefully we're going to get all the little glitches ironed out before you end up hearing it. This has been Caffeination number episode 274, the Ripen edition, and just a little bit longer on the vine, so to speak, so hopefully you enjoyed it. We talked about a lot of great and crazy stuff here on today's episode. If you were looking for this episode because you're listening to it somewhere else, or you walked into the office high, and somebody else was listening to this fantastic episode, then you need to head on over to www.caffeination.com. That's where this and all of the other episodes just like it, except with different stuff and probably a little bit better, are all lovingly nestled. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and they are all listed over at techpodcasts.com. Caffeination is also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. It's a social podcasting site. It's kind of like MySpace for podcasts. It's a relatively interesting site. That's Blubrry. And last but most certainly not least, the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. Thank you so much for listening. Stay caffeinated, people.